That was awesome. Definitely, we need more dancing and celebrating. So thank you for that reminder, Nancy, and for inviting us to be a part of that. It's one of my favorite songs. Good. Well, so now is the time for the sermon. I was listening to an audiobook. Part of being a member in a sermon with the United Northern Association is that they give you a minister to kind of be your mentor. And so mine is Pastor Toby up in Charlevoix, and he recommended this book called Who Stole My Church? And it's a very touching book. And I was going to make a really amazing point, and it escapes me. And that's what happens when, you know, you try to wing something here. But it is this idea just of churches being alive and being this congregation of spontaneity, and sometimes that can scare people. And I am just so appreciative that in this congregation, we can have fun and we can celebrate these moments and we can celebrate our faith as this community. And it's truly inspiring. So I want to hand that back to you. And I remember my point here now. So thank you. If you ramble long enough, it does come back. So the idea, though, in this book, one of the congregants in this idea of Who Stole My Church talks about a lot of different personalities within churches and pastors who may try to change the way things are done and the pushback they can receive. Said, well, he came in every morning with pray with the minister and said, may the preliminaries prep the minister for his sermon. And I thought, well, preliminaries? This is church. The sermon is a small portion of what we do here. And I just saw such a sermon from you all. And I hope that I can be a small part of today's worship. So never discount what we accomplish together. Okay, so the works of spring this morning. First, I want to send a shout out and thank Margie and Tom. Tom, you do an awesome job with the readings. Where are you at? You lost me here. Okay, he stepped out. No pressure, Tom. I'll only say good things, I promise. So he has a very good way of bringing those First Testament readings to life, and I'm so appreciative of that. And Margie, thank you so much for your music, and especially your singing this morning of our first hymn. I think that's a very powerful hymn, and the scripture reading that Tom read today from Isaiah was what that hymn is based upon. And if you were here last Sunday, you may recall out of chapter 4, Micah, John chose that as the First Testament reading for last week. And so I was up in the balcony, I almost fell out. I thought, really, John, out of this whole Bible, you have to pick the twin to the verse that I was going to read next week. And I wasn't sure if it was divine intervention saying to go for it or say change your mind, but I'm going for it. So we'll see where this goes. But as we look into that scripture reading into Isaiah, it really does remind us of the hope of God and those promises that the ancient Israelites felt that their God would provide to keep them safe. The people through the Exodus, the people just talking about creation and various plagues and various wars, losing their temples. These were really powerful words that God will be keeping coming back and bring peace. And that's really what that hymn centers on. So when I look at that hymn, I want to specifically here. I just want to read verse 3 on there, just in case you missed it. And it is on page 571 if you're curious. But whom shall we trust, O God, but you? For you are constant, strong, and true. None ever called on you in vain. Give peace, O God, give peace. Again. These were people who grew up and lived in a world that was not built with peace, yet they maintained hope that God could provide. And I think that is just so powerful, especially in these times that we are living in today. So now I want to jump over to it's a much longer reading. I gave myself, I think, like 12 verses to read, so Tom did step out, but he got the easy end of the stick here today. And this is from the letter from James, chapter 2, verse 14 through 26. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say and you have faith, but you do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and by my works will show you my faith. You believe that God is one, you do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. Do you want to be shown, you senseless person, that faith apart from works is barren? Was not our ancestor Abraham justified by works when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was brought to completion by the works. Thus the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him to be righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. You see that a person is justified by works and not faith alone. Likewise, was not Rahab, the prostitute, also justified by works when she welcomed the messengers and sent them out by another road? For just as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is also dead. Would you believe that Martin Luther did not like that part of the Bible? I'm just throwing that out there. So that really runs contrary to the Paulinian texts in Paul's letters, looking at Romans and Galatians. This idea that we are saved by faith alone. But whoever this author is in this letter of James is saying, wait a second, no, works matter. So we're left with this idea of, well, what is it? Works, not works. Well, I think first thing, and I think there's a lot to learn from this when we have disagreements, the first step is to look at where the other person's coming from and see what definitions they are using. And what we learn here between Paul and James is they're using two different definitions for works, yet they're arguing about salvation and faith. And I think when we put these in line and when we look at Paul's writings and James, I don't know if they really disagree as much as it sounds like at face value. You see, when we look back at Paul, and I won't drag you in today into Romans or Galatians, I'll try to keep it short. Preachers say that all the time, we never do, but we can say that. Paul is really talking about ritualistic works, the works of Judaism, the works of things like circumcision as being required for salvation and entry into that community of belief. That's not the definition that James is rolling with here. James is talking about works such as, if you see somebody is naked and they don't have food, don't just send them away and say good luck to you, go get clothes and eat. Help them. That there are works that are mandated as a part of our faith, and our faith and works are deeply intertwined, and that our faith is brought to completion by those works. And I think that is amazingly simple on one level, but amazing complex on the other. Because what works do we value? You know, where does that diversity of thought leave us? Which I suppose is why we have this community of faith, where we have different thoughts and definitions of works and how we define that. And that's going to only make us stronger when we listen and we work towards that justice and that peace that I believe James is discussing here. So with that in mind, in a little moment of scriptural whiplash, we're going to jump back to that Old Testament reading. I try not to be overly scriptural here and bounce around, but I think there's something that's important just to pay attention to here. And we go back to Isaiah. Isaiah and that song talk about the hope of God, the promises of God, and bringing in a new reality of peace. I think we often miss tweezing out some information out of verse 4. And I'm going to read that again out of Isaiah. He shall judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. It's easy to read this as God is bringing this hope and this peace and this new reality. What I'm reading here too is that people have skin in the game. God is giving us the hints and the clue and the hope and the invitation for a new world. But if you've ever been to a place like Greenfield Village, watched an old Western, you know blacksmith shops are amazingly hard work. They're loud, they're hot, they're sweaty. They're hammering this metal over and over, making small incremental changes to it with each pound. This is a type of work that when you are beating swords into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks, a simple burn in the ancient world could become deadly through infection. This is not in this reading simply saying, just take care of one another. This is reporting that people want it so bad that they are doing that hard, dangerous work to bring it into reality. And I think they deserve a little bit of credit with that. And I think that is something that Mr. Henry Baker in the first hymn missed with his song, is the responsibility that we have in bringing that new hope and world into a reality. And I think that is a reminder of the work of spring. We are coming out of a winter. We have a prayer list that is long. There are many hurts and many pains, but there is much hope ahead. What are we going to do with that? And what are our responsibilities? So my personal type of faith or spiritual practice, and I'm sure many of you have this as well outside of church, whether it be daily Bible devotionals, daily prayers, something that somehow you feel the Spirit alive, especially Monday through Saturday when we're not here together. For me, that's something called forest bathing, which is a fancy way of saying, I like to be in the woods. Like, that's my happy place, that's my zone, where I can go out and through nature, I can see God's ongoing creation. The birds in the sky, the squirrels running, the trees growing, year after year, life continues. Whether it's hunting or fishing or hiking or biking, that's my zone where I really do feel the Spirit moving through me. So specifically this time of year, something that we do in our family, so Leif, Matthew, and I, we like to make maple syrup. That is our reminder that yes, while the trees are still barren, life is here, the sweetness of life is returning again, God is providing. So at this point, we have about 50 taps out, and we boil and boil and boil and boil. And I like to tell my Catholic friends that while I make Protestant holy water, that their priest may bless their holy water, I just have to boil the heck out of mine, and then it turns into syrup. So Leif is not laughing. He does not want you to encourage me with these dad jokes. I'm sorry. He's upstairs, by the way, with his broken pelvis. He hobbled up there, so he's recovered. But something to look at here with sap. It takes 40 gallons of sap to get 1 gallon of syrup. And that sap that comes out of the spouts, out of the spiles, if you go out in a cold morning, you can sometimes, there's a little sapsicle hanging down from that spile. You can pop that off and put that ice in your mouth, and you can faintly taste the sweet sugar. It's only about 2% sugar, but if you know it, you're going to know that it's there, if you know what you're looking for. God provides us those little clues of hope. But the works of spring are not yet done. And we collect the sap. We cut the trees to boil the sap. We boil the heck out of the sap. And then we pour off the sap and filter the sap. And then we can the sap. And then we water bath the sap or the syrup by that point. And we're finally left with this little product of sweetness. And I suppose that's what I look at with James in the reading of Isaiah. That God sometimes gives us that 2% clue that something great is possible. But we need to be able to seize that. And through our hard work, we can bring it into a reality, into the world. And for folks who cannot sense that 2% that is speaking to them, they may miss the opportunity. But if we're listening to that, if we're watching for that, perhaps we can seize upon it in whatever our own individual abilities are to bring God's hope and peace into reality. as a community of faith here in this church. May we distill that reality out of one another. And out of, as individuals, may we take it out into the world. And as a little reminder to this, at the end of today's worship, Leif worked hard yesterday, and after I got the staff done outside, he went to the kitchen and he made cookies, maple cookies, for everybody to take home with you. So they're made out of sap that was in a tree yesterday and is now in a cookie, so it's about as official as you can get. And also for those who have gluten intolerance, we did bring some straight up maple syrup for you. So if you have, you can't have cookies, please let us know. We're happy to give you that. And I invite you to enjoy those and reflect on what is the 2% that God is calling for you? And what is the hard work that you can bring God's promises into reality? And with that, we'll have time for meditation and a prayer. Creator God, we thank you for this community of faith. May our hearts and minds be open to your beckoning chores, and may we have the will and our individual abilities to do our work with love and grace.